This is Caring Better and Braver. I'm your host, Jenna Juvie. Caregiving looks different for everyone, but one common thread between many family caregivers is that they're also working, employed in full-time or part-time positions. Today's episode follows the stories of three working caregivers in Wisconsin. They'll tell us how they manage to juggle work, home life, and caregiving. Their names have been changed to protect their privacy, so we'll call them Julie, Lila, and April. Let's start with Julie. Julie became her mother's primary caregiver about 6 years ago. She relocated to live with her mother while she was still working full-time. She has recently retired, a decision she made in order to reduce stress, focus on her own health, and continue caring for her mother. Here's Julie's story.
You know, you think as a social worker that you're well-equipped to manage certain of these things, right? And I would not say that anything I've done would be a great example. It would be more a matter of don't do this. But, you know. So I made the decision 6 years ago now to move from Madison, move my career from Madison, VA to Tolma and live with mom. My dad had died and it was plain that this was not going to work for her. So I moved into what is the fifth generation family farm. And it's not an active farm, but it's still like, you know, the barns. And then this house that is old and in need of repairs and sort of all of those things. And then managing my career and managing things related to mom as she has declined. I'm not a nurse. There's a lot of physical sorts of things that I'm not able to do. And mom early on said, if I get to the place where I need help with these kinds of, you know, bathing, toileting, blah, 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 that she would go to a nursing home, that would not be an expectation. And early on, it looked like that was a long ways away, right? 6 years ago. And 6 years ago, what she was safely able to do is very, very different than it is now. And so in the early time frame, she was not supposed to be going downstairs to do the laundry. And I would go to work, which was a 40-minute commute. I would go to work and then come back and find that she had indeed done that. You know, she thought that she should be making supper and doing the things, you know, as a parent that she had always done. So I would come home not knowing quite what I was encountering. So she would make casserole and put it in the oven. But when she was using the timer, she would turn the oven off. So there would be a cold casserole in the oven and no idea how long it had been in there, if it was safe to eat, right? That sort of stuff. So coming home to that and then wanting her to feel valued, to feel as independent as she could under the circumstances. So trying to sort of secretly behind the scenes manage whatever supper that was going to be. And, you know, of course, the housekeeping and those fundamental things, needing to do that. And early on, you know, she even at that point was sleeping a lot and very inactive because that was physically, you know, what she was able to do. So when I was home on the weekend, on a Saturday morning, I've got 2 hours and I've got to get through the whole house and get the vacuum and get all the stuff done. Well, she would want to help. And the pace and ways she would go about things would have been fine if I weren't in a terrible hurry. But that, you know, I need to get this done fast because then I need to get out and do the barns and the yard work. whatever. So that was the early part of life. And then the pandemic happened. I had the blessing really of a supervisor that allowed me to work from home. And very quickly in the pandemic got me home, period, knowing that, you know, COVID would kill my mother. And that working in a hospital setting and going back and forth, that was extremely risky. I learned this hypervigilance, which has been the thing that was the most stressful, frankly, as a caregiver. And I personally, emotionally, I have not managed to deal with that. So it's not just when I'm trying to sleep at night that I'm like, what is she doing? What is she doing? And you hear something and you know, what does that mean? And during the day, trying to work at, of all things, suicide prevention, you know, it is the hypervigilance and the exhaustion that comes with that. This is one example. She apparently wanted some broth, like chicken broth, at 5 o'clock in the morning. And she opened a can of chicken broth and put it in the microwave. And I heard the microwave, I was sleeping, but I heard the microwave and I was up like a shot, like, what's she doing? Because I know that she can't do that. She had put a cup of broth in and gave it 16 minutes. I think in terms of her care, it was much better to have somebody here. In terms of my contact with people, I mean, I didn't see virtually anyone for 2 years. So I missed that. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a point in the pandemic where I thought, I need to be in a caregiver support group, right? And I had tons of FMLA and tons of vacation. And so I had gone back to what was literally part-time, like 2 or 3 days a week off, because I had that much leave built up over the years. The other piece of that for my coworkers and for my boss was trying to make that viable. Like, how do you cover inconsistently, right? How do you really essentially cover for a part-time person? You can't hire to fill their slot because all that is FMLA, right? And we're used to doing that for young moms. We are not used to doing that for people of my age, for their parents. And so that was really tough because I was very concerned about my coworkers and the caseload and the patients and the things that I knew absolutely needed to be done. So sometimes, you know, my boss would say, do not get on the phone. Do not get on the Zoom meetings. Like, you are not working. This is your time off. But I would do it anyway. There was a time when my mom had, she literally had a seizure, which was very unusual for her. And I had literally gone to the bathroom just before a Zoom meeting for work. And I walked past and saw her having a seizure. And I'm like, oh, you know, medical emergency. But I, at some point in the midst of getting help for her, had to get on the, you know, with some of the colleagues and let them know that I'm done for the day. And they all knew, like they knew and were supportive. If I had had unsupportive coworkers and an unsupportive boss, I cannot imagine that any of this could have gone on. With this would have been done, you know, 3-4 years ago, probably. And I am at the place now where I have been in the emergency room like 5 times in 6 months because my own health is failing. Obviously, I can't take care of mom if I'm, you know, in the emergency. And all of the providers have said, you've got to back off the stress. You just have to. So retiring early was not enough. It just wasn't enough. There are huge financial consequences to making that decision, but that's what I did. And then the whole thought process about how do you say, I can't do this anymore, mm-hmm. and make those decisions, that has been brutal, really, really difficult.
Caregiving often forces us to revise our priorities and goals. Just like Julie, many caregivers experience their own health decline while they're caring for someone else. It's not easy to recognize or even admit to ourselves when we've reached our limit. Let's move to our next story. Lila's a caregiver for her father, who still lives independently in his own home. She works full-time and has children who are still in school. While at work, she uses indoor cameras to keep an eye on her dad throughout the day and checks on him up to 20 times. Even with the cameras and people she can call on to help, there are times when Lila needs to leave work to care for her father. Here's Lila's story.
So, Dad lived with me for 4 months before he had his transplant. And then he had the transplant and he was down at UW-Madison for 90 days. And then he came back and lived with me. So this was over a year and a half process. And now here we are back again. I'm doing the same thing. I'm the only child and my dad's the only child and my mom has passed. And here I am. Even with families that have lots of siblings, or even two or three, everybody wants to give the one person that's the primary caregiver all this advice, but they make it worse for the person that is the caregiver because they just think that you can do all this stuff and it's really tainted. Like my aunt, she's constantly telling me what I should be doing, how I should stick my dad in a nursing home and just let them take care of him. Well, I'm not going to do that. It's just hard. It's really hard. I mean, I have cameras on them, and let me tell you, there's things you don't want to see your 76-year-old father walking around the house doing when you check on him. But hey, he's there and he's safe. The other day, he did something to his phone. So I talked to him probably 2-3 times a day. He wouldn't answer his phone, so it was nice because I looked on the cameras. Well, he's sitting there in front of the TV. I know where he is. I'll be out in the morning. I'm just constantly checking, probably about 15 to 20 times a day. When he does tasks, he gets so winded because he's got the COPD. If he doesn't have, you know, something that he can lean up on and rest, I'm always worried that he's going to be on the floor. And he broke his back many years ago, so he's got arthritis in his back. He's very mobile, but what if he collapses and, you know, hurts himself? So I just kind of, I do check him because anybody can fall at any age. But when your mind isn't working the way it is. Is he able to figure out if he bumped his head? Is he going to be able to figure out how to get off the floor? He can't, most days he can't call out on the phone. Most days he doesn't remember that he can just say, "Hey, Alexa." I've had to leave work probably 4 or 5 times now. You know, I've had to go out there because the phone isn't working. He thought somebody broke into his garage. He supposedly went to the Southside Walmart and he was in Galesville. He lost all of his meds. We still don't know where the meds, the pillbox, all of that is. You know, so yeah, I never know. There's been times when I've had to call on extended family members to go check on him. The one time it was snowing, couldn't get him to answer the phone, and he had disconnected the cameras. It was a bad snowstorm, and I had to have a family friend of ours go out there because nobody could find him. Nobody could get a hold of him. I got him the first alert button. He's lost 4 of them. I'm like, we're done buying those right now. Because he doesn't like anything on his wrist. But I do have a GPS thing in a shoe. It's a hard balance. You know, it does impact my life daily. Like today, I have to figure out tonight when I get done with work how I'm going to get all of his stuff taken care of, go out by him, take care of my stuff, plus get to one of my daughter's events. It's her senior year of high school. I'm very lucky in the role that I have, the flexibility that I have. I've got great support. I know a lot of people don't have that. So I feel grateful. And without that, I probably would be struggling a lot more.
Our last story today is about a caregiver named April. April knew she would help her parents as they aged, but her journey started sooner than expected and was complicated by the pandemic. Her father passed away and her mother needed regular care. April lived 2 hours away, so she orchestrated home care services until recently when that was no longer feasible. She too saw the benefits of technology for home safety and long-distance caregiving. Most of all, she learned the importance of asking questions and being prepared.
My parents identified me as the person they would want to look after them when they couldn't do that. And they were a long ways from needing me, but I lived 1,000 miles away and decided to move home because I just thought they're aging and I want quality time with them, you know, these last couple decades of their life. So I came back and lived about 2 hours away. And it wasn't but about a year after I moved here and I was living 2 hours away that my mom was diagnosed with dementia. And so I just became really actively involved in her care from a distance, you know, kind of helping with the appointments and just, you know, kind of shepherding that process along. But she was living with my dad. They were in their own home. And just over about 15 years, it declined. When I really noticed I had to step up was when their electricity got shut off. And it was because I recognized they weren't paying their bills on time. So they had lost track of that. And they had always been terrifically organized and on top of things. I thought, nope, things are changing. And it's changing for both of them. So became very, very involved at that point. And then a couple of years ago, right at the start of the pandemic, my dad passed away suddenly. And it had always been the plan for my parents to stay in their home always. That was what they wanted. They had made that very, very clear. But when he passed away, it was clear that my mom could not live alone anymore because of the way she was declining. And so then it was, how do I honor her wishes to be in her own home, be her caregiver from 2 hours away when I can't change jobs and move there at the moment? Yeah. So long distance caregiving, full-time plus working. And then my second full-time job is monitoring her care. And that has just had a couple iterations over the past couple of years. It's evolved. It's had a lot of changes and it's taken a lot of work while doing this job. A couple of years into this, I finally gave up and got the Apple Watch so that my phone could be on my wrist at all times because those calls come at any time of day. And the only way I can manage any kind of personal life, like going out kayaking or, you know, being on the water, is to have the phone on my wrist because the calls come at all times. I'm really grateful that I have a relationship with my employer that's been supportive. They understand that the phone rings when I'm in the middle of meetings, and they just know that it may have something to do with my mother's care. And I appreciate that. I know not everyone has that. For a long part of this journey, not right now, because I got her into memory care finally. She really needed that for safety. But for a large part of this journey, the only way to keep her safe at home was to have cameras in the house. And so made the decision to have, you know, kind of out there where people can see them, nanny cams. You know, they weren't a secret. There was, you know, we notified anyone who was in the house that they were there. But the only way I could really know that she was safe was to watch. And so here I've been doing my job while sometimes simultaneously watching and seeing things happening. And have had the experience of things that I've seen that have been very concerning and very alarming, and then had to sign out of work and, you know, drive 2 hours to go see what was really happening or talk to the agency and talk to the supervisors about what I was seeing. It has been such a strong priority of my parents and as an entire family for them to remain at home. And so we pulled out all the stops logistically and financially to keep them there. And I'm glad that we did it for as long as we could until it was no longer viable, but it was not an easy go. I learned a lot. If I had to dial back, I would know now all the things you need to ask about ahead of time before you hire in-home care. And I work in the field. I work in the medical field. I would have thought that I knew, but I had no idea what kinds of things could happen with people coming into the home. What I observed was, you know, people coming in who had no training in dementia capable care. They really didn't know how to work with someone with, you know, moderate to severe dementia. They not only didn't get training, but didn't have any kind of clinical supervision. They didn't have anyone to go to So they were trying to figure this out on their own, sometimes coming into the house with no knowledge ahead of time of anything about my mother. And so this was 24 hour a day care. So they, you know, the only person they had to go to get consultation or advice was me, which I'm happy to do, but working full time, I wasn't always available. You know, the other thing that was so difficult was even for an agency that had an app on their phone, you know, the caregivers would theoretically check in on the app and theoretically we would know when they were there, but there really wasn't any way to verify what was actually happening in the house against that app. So they would have a task list and it would show everything that they theoretically were doing. And I could observe both from our cameras and being there that they weren't doing any of them. You know, one of my worst moments was hearing our Ring video doorbell go off and notify me that the front door had opened. And it wasn't during a shift change, so I knew something else was happening. And that was my mother walking out the door and the caregiver was on the sofa sleeping. You know, I'm just not going to tire you with the endless stories of that. But in retrospect, I know that up front, I needed to ask, and I would want people to know, you've got to know what the accountability is. How is what they're doing being verified? Who is keeping an eye out? What happens if they're not going to make it to work? You know, I had people calling me and saying, the caregiver can't come. You need to come and take care of your mom. You know, at 1 a.m. from 2 hours away, because they didn't have a backup plan. There wasn't an on-call component. And this was theoretically the best place in town. And it was certainly the most expensive one in town, but there just weren't solid procedures for accountability. There's a lot you need to know going in and really have a solid plan and a solid backup plan. And so I got her into memory care finally. She really needed that. It's 8 months now that she's been in care, and it probably took half of that just to settle in and stop worrying, because I was just so conditioned to have to be hypervigilant and wondering all the time. Like, I was always on, always monitoring. Every time the phone rang, what's happening now? Who's not showing up? And I really had so much sleep loss because of it, you know? So it really took a while to trust in that and have faith in that, that now she's in good care. And I'm so grateful that the care she's in is incredible. So finally, I kind of don't know what to do with myself. And sometimes, you know what? I almost feel guilty because I'm not in that constant checking mode, that constant caregiving mode. Like, all of a sudden I noticed that I went and did something for myself. I think I took an outing or something. I thought, oh my gosh, I hadn't done this in 2 years. And I didn't even notice that I wasn't doing it anymore. It was something I really enjoyed. And I thought, look at that timing. It's once I got her moved. I really didn't realize how much I had neglected. It erodes and you lose track of how much you're losing. And then all of a sudden, when you have the opportunity to get it back, you recognize how much you've given up. And I don't mean that to sound so negative, because if I had to do it all again, I would, because it's what it took to keep her at home. But there was a time when that had to end. The thing that I notice now, I mean, let's put my needs aside. What I notice is how much better she looks. You know, we talk about physical safety, but I think her psychological safety was really compromised. All of those commitments we made to keeping her at home. I was glad she was there, but she looked like she was agitated a lot. She looked like she was in distress. And so it was a very tough decision to take her out of the home and putting her in memory care, because I battled with myself. I thought that's not what she wanted. But the proof is in her, because she's lighter, she's brighter. And when I go to visit her, she'll say, "Don't I have a lovely home here? Would you like to spend the night? Isn't this beautiful?" She's happy and she's content. What I did differently this time is I asked so many questions up front, even though this is a different kind of care. You know, it's an institutional setting and it's wonderful. It's very home-like, but I just knew I had to really, really advocate, not just for her, but for myself up front and ask so much. And I kind of named it for them and apologized to them up front. I said, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to ask you a lot. And I'm going to go into this eyes wide open for my mom, but also for me as a caregiver. And that really helped. You don't know what you don't know.
Working caregivers are a population that's often overlooked. More than half of working age adults are family caregivers. and the majority of them are working full-time. The younger a caregiver is, the more likely it is that they're employed. Caregivers depend on their employment for financial security and to cover expenses even for their care recipient, but their dual roles impact their careers and their employers. The one thing the three caregivers we heard from today have in common is a supportive, flexible workplace. Without that flexibility and support, they would not have been able to manage their careers and the full-time job of caregiving. But not every caregiver in the workforce has the support that they need. 70% of working caregivers experience work problems due to their role. More than 8 in 10 employed caregivers in Wisconsin experience work-life interruptions, the need to use flex time, reduce work hours, or even quit work entirely. When caregivers must choose their role over their career, employers experience a drain on productivity. They have problems with recruitment, retention, and turnover. The lack of flexibility and workplace supports for caregivers is actually a major part of the workforce shortage crisis that needs to be addressed. Fortunately, there are resources that can help businesses work toward a solution. The report on Wisconsin Working Caregivers, Strategies, and Resources for Employers is a great place to start. Also, acknowledging caregivers in the workplace, understanding how their roles impact their work, that's another important step. The Aging and Disability Resource Centers in Wisconsin can also help. When caregivers have the tools to balance work and caregiving, they stay in the workforce longer. When employers support working caregivers, they see improved retention and productivity. It's a win-win. Thanks, caregivers, for tuning in today. And special thanks to our three caregivers who are brave to share their stories with us. Stay tuned for more episodes to come in 2023. This podcast was brought to you with support from the Aging and Disability Resource Center of La Crosse County and music by Lemon Music Studios.